Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 102. If you're listening on drop day, it's July 25th. This is the official podcast of riding the roller coaster that is the Boston Red Sox, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify, subscribe, rate 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube. We are on the WEEI channel. Play Tessie's got its own playlist there. You can hit the thumbs up on those videos and we really appreciate it. Also find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Joe, who's filling in for Pat today. And it's bittersweet. It's just like a bittersweet feeling as a Red Sox fan. A lot happened today. There were tears of joy. There were tears of laughter. There were tears of sorrow. As we record this, like the day kind of started at like 2 something when the news of Alex Cora or agreeing to a contract extension with the Boston Red Sox dropped from Jeff Passan and Buster Olney, later confirmed, and it is now official. He is going to be with the Red Sox for the next 3+ years. That was great and thrilled about that. But at the same time as that, the Red Sox have not been playing good baseball lately. I know that they will tell you they've been in every game, and they've been in 4 out of the 6 games. So, yes, they have been in the games, but they have lost 5 out of 6 coming out of the break. They just dropped two of three to the Colorado Rockies, who are like 30 games under 500. It has not been good. But at the end of it all, Craig Breslow declared them buyers. So it's been a weird day. They lost by like 15 runs. But at the end of the day, Alex Cora got extended and they're doing the right things, and I want to be happy about it. But at the same time, we like acknowledged before the series started that this could be a tough series despite going against the Rockies. Obviously, going to Colorado is never easy on your body, and certainly it's not easy on pitchers. Obviously, great that all of these other things are happening, but at the end of the day, why do we want Alex Cora here? Why do we want them to add at the deadline? It's because we want to see the team win ball games. And you've got the rest of July, you've got August, and you got September. You got 2+ months. And obviously they've played good baseball for the majority of this season. But and now it's not quite as pressing because they have made the decision to be buyers. So it's not like you need to watch the standings super closely to make sure that they're within 1 or 2 games of a playoff spot. Otherwise, you're at risk of management selling the team or selling off rentals. It's not at that point anymore. But at the same time, this team is going to have to start winning ball games, and they're going to have to start doing it soon, especially as they play teams like the New York Yankees. So obviously, I just basically word vomited you there, but that's kind of how my head is feeling right now because there are just so many emotions going through it. I don't even... Fellas, like, where on the scale of, like, I am so thrilled that they extended Alex Cora to I'm so pissed that they just have lost 5 out of 6 coming out of the break. Where are you?
I mean, I think the Cora thing has to be number one front of mind. That's the big picture move. We all kind of agreed that we didn't think he was going to come back. He was a lame duck going into the season, which probably never should have been the case. But we're all thrilled that he got this 3-year extension. It shows that the Red Sox believe in him. And I think that him signing this extension points to the Red Sox kind of going back to the way they used to be, where they spend money and they keep their guys around for the most part, and you know, better days ahead. This game today on Wednesday, as we record, kind of a laugher. The Red Sox got smoked by a bad Rockies team on the road. It was a weird game, weird day, bad defense. Pivetta seemed like he was suffering from that thin Colorado air, couldn't get the usual movement on the pitches. Just throw it away. Big picture, you got Cora extended. You're right in the mix of the playoff hunt, trying to get one of those wild card spots. Breslow says he's going to buy. I'm still in the camp of I'll believe it when I see it. But they're competitive. This is a good team. Things are still good despite this rocky, no pun intended, rocky start to the second half of the season.
So I think we should start this out and talk a little bit about the Cora extension. More than a little bit. It's a huge piece of news because all of the reporting and everything you heard was this guy's as good as gone. And personally, I never quite bought into that just because I knew how much he loved it here and I know how much he cares about raising his family here. I mean, we talked about this last week on the show that like I was always under the impression that if you threw the right dollar amount at him, he would sign it. But at the same time, like I was never convinced that the Red Sox were going to do that. So
yeah,
I just sort of figured they would let him set the market. And if it was something they would consider, then they would do it. And if some team offered him $10 million a year, then it would be like, okay, like enjoy your life. But you could tell by the way Alex Cora talked after the game today that it was all a little bit, I don't want to say it was an act because it definitely wasn't an act. Like the Red Sox definitely did need to give him the right offer. But at the same time, his intent was always to return here. He made that pretty clear after the game.
You read that way better than I did because this entire time I've been thinking he's gone. He's going to go to the Dodgers. I never thought he'd go to the Yankees. I know some people thought that, but like just the way that stuff was going with front office and everything, I felt like he had run his course, stuck around a little bit longer because the Red Sox were loyal to him after the Astros situation. And I felt like he had had enough. I know that he has his family here and everything, but I felt like he cares so much about winning. And the Red Sox have just kind of put that to the side in terms of how the front office operates, at least, and that he wouldn't want to be part of it anymore. But that's also why when I initially spoke on this episode, I said this points to better days ahead, because if Cora's sticking around, I think they're going to try to win. And I'm happily wrong, assuming that what I just said is true. I'll be happily wrong about the Cora situation. And I'm thrilled as a fan of the team. I'm thrilled that he's coming back. I think he's one of the best managers in the game, if not the best manager in the game. He's so good at handling this young team. I think the players love him just from our limited access that we have when we're on the field. It seems like he has a great relationship with the players. He's great to us. He's great to media. He's just a great guy. I'm psyched about it, man. I'm trying to focus on Cora and not so much on the 13-run loss, which we just had to endure. But I don't understand how every Red Sox fan couldn't be thrilled about this. This is great news.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I like always thought that Alex Cora was going to be back. That's not exactly what I'm saying, but I definitely thought that it was in the balance because I thought that I didn't know that the Red Sox were going to be willing to offer him anything close to $7 million a year for a manager. I thought, you know, maybe they would go to like 4 or 5 and that he would test the market and maybe get 8, 9. And at that point, it's like, I know you and your family love Boston, but can you really turn away like 10, 15, $20 million? It's not like, you know, Alex Cora did play Major League Baseball, but it's not like he's got $100 million of big league salary to his name. But Sammy, you bring up a good point that this kind of, or at least it could potentially point to better days ahead for the Red Sox, because would Alex Cora really sign back on here in Boston if he did not believe that they were going to do the necessary things to win? It's a really interesting question because I think he thinks that they're going to win. I think he's not stupid. You can see what's coming. You can look at the farm. You can look at the big league team they already have. They've got everything needed to win. But I think when you ask that question, I think most people interpret it as him signing on back in Boston means that he's under the impression that ownership is going to get back to their ways of spending.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
I don't know if that's true.
That's the big thing for me is what I think led to this. Well, first off, they, as you said, Gordo, they pulled the wool over everyone's eyes because I thought this was an ownership and a manager that were locking heads and no one was going to blink first. But in going on to that point, unless this was a one-on-one meeting, I mean, reading Alex Spears' column, and listening to Alex Cora in the post game, unless these two sat down and Breslow reassured Cora that we will invest, we will buy, and we will add on to this team. We won't do what we've been doing the last couple of years. That could have been the decider. You know, the contract could have been on the table. The money could have been there. And it was all it for Cora, it could have been all about the winning. So that's probably something we're not going to hear about today. We probably won't hear it a week from now. Who knows when we hear it from now. But those are the words that had to come out of Craig Breslow's mouth when those two met, was that we are going to invest.
Do you think that's true, though? Because to me, if Craig Breslow sits down at the table with Cora, for reference here, Craig Counsell, he is the reason that managers are now making money. He signed a five-year deal worth $8 million a year. That's $40 million. Alex Cora is going to get $7 million, or just over $7 million. Do you not think that if Craig Breslow sat down at the table and said, we are going to give you $7 million a year, you're going to get to keep your family in ball, they are going to win ball games. Regardless of whether they invest or not financially in the team more than they have, they're going to win ball games. Do you think that that's not enough for AC to sign that deal with just over $21 million staring him in the face? I think that's enough. I don't think this necessarily means that they're going to spend. I'm not saying they won't. But I'm just saying I don't think that Alex Cora got some sort of promise that they're going to spend.
I mean, does this not count as spending? You just spent a ton of money on Cora. I feel like that's a good sign.
I think it does count.
So, I mean, maybe it's not the same level of spending that we're used to, like the days when they would just get big free agents all the time. But I don't know, man. I feel like it has to be a positive. I think that maybe you're right in that they won't be spending a ton, but they're going to be competing in a different way. Like they're going to be competing. They're not going to be punting at the trade deadline. They're not going to be doing stuff that kick the can down the road every single year, stuff like that. So it just has to be a good sign that no matter how I look at it, when something like this happens in my head, I always give it the most positive spin and then the most negative spin. And I kind of try to think which is the more realistic end and then kind of meet somewhere in the middle. I can't think of a negative to this unless something goes catastrophically wrong where Cora butts heads with ownership or something to a degree that we haven't seen before. So I think if I were a betting man, I wouldn't say they're going to go back to signing David Price level contracts all the time. But I do think they're going to add more often than they have been in the years prior.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're entering a new stage in their build. And it's obvious that they've got a good core at the big league level. They've got a good core coming. It's basically going to be two colliding good cores together, basically separated by a couple of years in terms of when their contracts are going to expire. And it's all going
to be... This is like the crux of Alex Speer's book, Homegrown, which I love to reference because I can't read books, but I did read this book. And he talks about how the young guys came up and they supplemented the veteran players or the guys who were already up there. And it was kind of what you just described, like two different groups colliding to create this unbelievable team. And I'm not saying that Red Sox fans should imminently expect another 108-win Red Sox team like 2018. But I do think that this has to point to more aggressive managing of the team, whether it's money or not. Like, if that makes sense. I feel like
In terms of prospects, yeah, Breslow has said that. He said it now. He said it literally today in Spear's piece, where he said that, we've got surpluses in areas, and we've got to, at some point, use that surplus to address areas where we're not as strong. And it hasn't happened yet, but that he's been on the job for like 6-7 months or whatever. That does not mean it's not going to happen.
There's no more waiting for the baseball gods. There's no everyone thinks we're underdogs. They're actually going to, rather than use these outside forces that they hope work, they're actually, as Sammy said, going to be much more aggressive in wanting to put together a competitive team.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to sound like I'm like fence sitting here saying, oh, they're going to spend more, but not like that. I'm just saying, I don't think they're going to keep kicking the can down the road. We're not going to be waiting for next year, every year over and over and over. Maybe they're going to spend this year. Maybe they're going to spend this year. Maybe they're going to go for it this year. I think we're going to start to see them cash in on those prospects that they have a surplus of. We'll see what happens with the money, but I'm just excited for more years of competitive Red Sox baseball ahead, because I think that's what we're in store for.
And that's what Alex Cora can see. I mean, we all watch every single game, and obviously within the walls of that clubhouse, like talking to these guys every single day and like managing them and understanding the organization in the way that, because they've got way more data on their own organization than the rest of the baseball world combined has on it. So they obviously see it. And Alex Cora obviously sees it. I want to say that the biggest surprise to me with all of this is not that he signed back on. To me, the biggest surprise was that it happened in season. Obviously, yes. We talked about it on the show. If the Red Sox bring the Craig Counsell deal to Cora, is he realistically going to turn it down? And we all agreed he probably wouldn't turn it down. But I always thought that the Red Sox, because to me, this was always on the everyone talked about it on the Cora side of things. I always thought it was on the Red Sox side of things. Was John Henry going to give a budget? And is it going to be a baseball budget? And is he going to tell Breslow, you can sign the manager to this amount of money, but that's going to be a part of that budget, and now you're not going to be able to spend that on players. I always thought that they were going to let Cora test the market in the offseason. Cora would be happy to do it, and if the Red Sox had a competitive offer, stay. I think him staying in and re-signing in the middle of the season just shows you how important it was to him to stay in Boston, because at this point, the Red Sox
have
been
too.
So competitive. And to them,
Red Sox too, yeah. But not like, just Cora.
It's not like Alex Cora can suffer some season-ending elbow injury or whatnot. Like, no, he's proven that he's managed this. He's managed circles around everybody in baseball. This team is so much better than anyone thought it was going to be. Even if they sucked the rest of the way, everyone would have just blamed it on whatever happened at the trade deadline. He easily could have walked to free agency and probably earned more money. But the money was in front of him. The opportunity to stay and keep his family was here. It just shows you how much of a factor that stuff was to AC.
You know, how happy are you guys that we don't have to deal with that in the offseason?
Oh,
is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Oh, God, we don't have to deal with that. And you're right, Gordo. It's not like signing a player. It's not like Giolito. We got him and then elbow injury. You don't get to see him until next year. But like this, it makes me feel, how do I say this? Comfortable as a Red Sox fan. I'm like, God, we're in good hands. Like, there's some continuity with the front office and the coaching staff, and the young guys are going to get to be around the same manager for a while, and are going to get to grow together. And Cora's a fairly young manager himself, so I just think all of it just is, it's such a good mix. I'm glad that the Red Sox didn't mess this up. We used to talk about them like, oh, of course they did this and that. Now we're like, oh, good, they didn't mess it up. I also want to add that it's really funny. I'm looking at the Red Sox Twitter right now. The game ended, post the final score, very ugly. And then immediately, Cora, 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 just burying that game.
I don't blame him.
Burn the tapes on that one. You got nothing to learn from it.
Yeah.
Just like old Yeller, take it to the back and let this it die.
Old Yeller game.
So on that note, should we talk about the series?
Yeah, they lost the first game, they won the second game, and they lost the third game. All right, you want to preview the...
Our manager's still here.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing about... I'll say it specifically about the first game, but I heard it about some of the Dodgers games too, and we were texting about this, but I have to say it on the podcast because it needs to be done away with forever. If you're calling the game on the local Red Sox broadcast and the Red Sox lose a heartbreaker... It does not count as a good game. That's not a good game. If the Red Sox use up their entire... In the first game, they used up all of their high leverage relievers for the third time in 4 days, and they lost for the fourth straight game. They kept us all up late and lost the game in heartbreaking fashion after blowing multiple eighth inning or later leads. No, that's
not a good game. For the listeners,
not a good game.
Gordo absolutely hates when the Red Sox lose a close game like that. And someone says, hey, that was a really good game.
Not a good game.
I think the difference is you're viewing it as a Red Sox fan. They're saying it was a good game in terms of entertaining baseball, which
saying. Screw that.
Yeah, I'm more on your side. Don't worry. I'm more on your side. I just think it's so funny. They start before game two, the pregame, they go, yeah, last night the Red Sox lost, but that was a great game. And we all texted Gordo. Gordo, do you agree? Did you have fun watching that game? But no, I do want to make a comment about the first game, the extra innings game. Another masterclass by Alex Cora. That was so well done. I'm so pissed that they didn't win that game. He was kept pressing the right buttons, and then the pitching would just falter. But he just kept, I don't know, I thought he did a really good job that game. There were a few times this series where I was questioning Cora, which is funny, as he got extended today. I didn't love the Wednesday lineup, but I did think that on Monday, I thought he did a really good job, and the players kind of just didn't come through in the end. But yeah, you guys want to talk about that first game anymore? It was long, and they lost.
It's just funny to see, like, you know, Zach Kelly giving up that home run. That's like another one in a million thing. Like, going back to the Dodgers series, you wouldn't, like, it's one in a million that Kike Hernandez would hit the tying home run off of Kenley Jansen. Ugh. Like, that's a one in a million thing. Cutter Crawford letting up five solo home runs, another one in a million kind of thing. Just everything that seemed so unlikely, like, and Bernardino getting blown up by Freddie Freeman on Friday. Basically, everything that's happened in the last, in five of the last six games have all been like one in a million. I can't believe that just happened. This very rarely has happened in the season. That's just how I felt in this recent stretch of games, including in the first game.
Yeah. And like, obviously, like, take it for whatever it's worth being in Colorado. And I know the Rockies have a much better record at home than they do on the road, which makes sense. Typically, and like, I read all about this when the Red Sox signed Trevor Story. It's like, when you leave Colorado and go to lower altitude, it like takes you a while to adjust to it. And it just, like, I guess, makes you bad. So
both ways,
it
makes just sense. The ball moves differently.
Right. But it's also like the impact on your body. So yeah, it makes sense that they are way worse on the road than they are at home. So like, obviously, if the Red Sox had played the Rockies at Fenway, hopefully the series would have gone differently, but that wasn't how it went. It was just so interesting. Like, game two starts, and like, obviously at the start of game two, we're coming off the four straight losses in the fashion that they lost those four games. And in those four games, there were five blown saves, which is completely wild. Like, I don't care who you're throwing out. I don't care what relievers are hurt. Blowing five saves in a four game stretch is crazy. But the Red Sox go up 3-0 in the first. Tyler O'Neill hits the big home run to kind of allow you to exhale a little bit, because after those four games, you're kind of holding your breath from the jump. And God, who pitched the second game? Oh, it was Cooper Criswell, who was fucking fantastic. Lets up a hit, I think, to lead off the first inning. And the Red Sox are up 3-1, but just the leadoff single had me like shivering, because at that point I was just so broken by the way that those previous four games had gone. And like, props to Cooper Criswell for, I have no idea how he goes seven shut in Colorado. I mean, after everything else that we saw, but I mean, he kept that game within reason. That was a 6-0 game. If he has even like a okay start, like, that's a game where you're screwed, because you've used Zach Kelly for high 20s pitches the day before. Like, you don't have any of your top three relief pitchers, and Zach Kelly's down. So if Cooper Criswell goes quality start, guess what? You're sweating it out with your like fourth, fifth, sixth relief options trying to close out a game in Colorado. So big shout to Cooper Criswell.
I think we're going to look back on that start and call it the start that saved the season, because this stretch has been bad, but there's still a ton of time left to make up. And it's only a two-game deficit that you're out on that third wildcard spot as we're recording, to the Royals and the Twins. You know, they just had Buxton get injured again, so they're still within reach. But if you go back to that game and Criswell pitches like shit, that means you will have lost six straight coming out of the All-Star break. You look at what Criswell did with an absolutely banged up bullpen. Basically, everyone is on their last legs. You don't have your top three relievers, and you see Criswell come out and absolutely deal when you absolutely needed it. I joked about it, but I'm serious that I, like you, Gordo, probably would have given him series MVP if they had won in this third game.
So, same.
Especially with O'Neill not even playing, it would have been so easy.
I actually wrote out a text to you guys, and I said, if the Red Sox win today, I'm making Criswell the series MVP, and I deleted it because I was like, oh, it's better podcasting if it's a surprise. But I swear to God, I wrote that out and then deleted it. He what would be the argument against it? Like, I know O'Neill had that big game, but it was already out of reach when he hit that second home run. So Cooper Criswell, that was just also... I'm a little confused, because how can Pivetta, both of their breaking balls looked flat. Like, Hauk wasn't getting the same horizontal movement he normally gets. Pivetta, his pitch looked like it was moving, but like differently than usual. It might have just been me, but Criswell seemed fine. And I know he goes to that slider, that sweeper, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I know he goes to that a lot, but I think, and this is just me hypothesizing, I think the sinker might be the difference in Colorado because that plays well. We saw it with Austin Gomber. He was getting them with the split. So Gordo's favorite pitcher. So yeah, man, if you're the Rockies, that is a tough job to assemble a pitching staff that can handle Coors, but is also good pitchers outside of Coors. So
not to mention, no one wants to sign there. And you have to remember, it's not like it's like the NBA basketball draft where you just draft a guy and like there's like a set like guys have to negotiate contracts and basically before they're drafted. So it's hard to like get guys excited at any point in their careers about going to Colorado, not to mention their player development is terrible. So there's a reason they develop bats. Never...
Like they have good like decent bats, but like their number one prospect is a starting pitcher, Chase Dolander. And every time you see him analyzed, it's like, this kid's great. Like, look at his fastball's awesome. He does this, he does that, big kid. But he's going to be pitching in Coors Field half the time.
Right.
So I don't know. It's kind of like when a guy goes to the A's, I'm like, oh man, I feel for that guy. That's like a weird experience compared to like a guy who's playing for like the Red Sox or the Yankees or a team like that. But at least Coors Field is gorgeous and it looks like they get really good crowds for most games. So it could be worse.
Back to the Criswell thing for a second. And it coincided right in the moment where Rafi like had us convinced that his arm had fallen off and he was going to be out for 3 years. But that, I want to say that, I forget if it was either the sixth or the seventh inning when he did it, but that situation was first and second, no outs. Think about where our minds were. It was first and second, no outs, and we thought Rafael Devers was dead. And then within 5 minutes, they got out of the inning scoreless, and Rafi was laughing and looking at the iPad and had a bubblegum wrapper stuck to his helmet. Like, I'm shocked they lost the third game because getting out of that inning and Rafi being fine, like it feels like you're invincible.
Yeah.
Rafi, never
do that again, Rafi. That was not funny. Not funny. Don't do it again. You know when something happens and it just shocks your system?
Yeah.
And you're kind of just like out of it for a little bit. That's how I felt when he went down and the way that Dave O'Brien, nothing against him, but the way that he was talking about it, he goes, oh no, oh no. Like here comes Rafaela's running over to check on him. Cora sprints out of the dugout and fucking Rafi is face down on the ground like, oh.
With half the team around him too.
Yeah.
Everyone's gathering around him.
Yeah, it's like he just, oh my God.
Just trying to loosen the squad up, you know? We got the lead, but we got to loosen up.
It was exactly what happened with Trevor Story. The exact sequence. You dive, you fall, you're hurting yourself, you're holding your shoulder. The shortstop, or in Story's case, the third baseman runs over. Then the half of the team runs over, the core and the trainer. It was all the same, except Story actually died. And Rafi, again, like giggling at the iPad with a gum wrapper on his helmet like 2 minutes later. I'm thrilled that he's okay, but holy crap, like our sanity's on the line here.
Yeah, I know, I'm mad. I'm mad at him for messing with my mental health. And yeah, that was so funny. He comes out his next step at first, like he just like narrowly avoided death. And then he comes up the next at bat. He's like, hey, there's a gum wrapper on my helmet. Like, dude, we're mad at you right now. We love you, but we're emotionally scarred because of you. Please.
Ugh. We're all like fathers at the young kid, like, don't you scare us like that again.
Yes, I love you, son, but don't ever do that again.
Yes, don't.
Don't you ever try to run away from home.
Yeah.
What, Joe?
Joe, you run away from home a lot as a kid?
I attempted. Never made it far.
How far did you go?
I did that as a kid.
You guys both ran away. I thought about it a lot, but I always knew that like it wouldn't work out in the end for me if I tried it. So I didn't want to suffer the embarrassment of having to walk back home with my tail between my legs.
I had a crush on my friend's mom, and so I tried to run away from home and go to her house, but then I realized it was like an hour and a half walk. And my mom was like, Sam, do you want to come home? And I was like, at the end of the driveway. I didn't make it. But I did. I did really like. I was like, I'm gonna run away, and I'm gonna live with my friend's mom. I was like, so, yeah, five.
Rafi, never go run away to live with your friend's mom. We're not doing that anymore, Rafi.
Even if you have a big crush on her.
Yes, we're not doing it. So
got it, Sammy.
Yeah, I got it.
That's for you and Cal Quantrill.
Okay. That might be the only thing I want to talk about from the third game. Pivetta was not good. Okay? We established it.
No.
But Cal Quantrill, who for whatever reason the Red Sox, and I don't want to say for whatever reason, because the reason is because he's a dickhead. But the Red Sox seem to have problems with Cal Quantrill all the time. It was a few years ago he showed up Devers, and then the next year Rafi comes back to Cleveland, faces him, and takes him to like three moons away. Now it's he gets Reese McGuire to pop up and just out of nowhere. What was the quote? It was go jerk off in a fucking parking lot, you dumb fuck.
He said, yeah, I think it was hold on. Let me get this. We gotta keep our journalistic integrity. We gotta get this quote right. It's very important. All right, he said
with a straight face.
He said, go jack off in the fucking parking lot, you dumb fuck.
I mean, it's like I get, and like I'm glad that like Duran and the guys like stood up for him, and like the bench is emptied and the bullpen's emptied and stuff. But like that's objectively funny as hell. Like that's like a great chirp.
You know what was really funny was on Twitter, Jonathan Papelbon apparently didn't know.
Oh yeah,
the Reese McGuire thing, and he was like, "Did I miss something? What is this joke?" And he's like super locked in, so it was surprising that he didn't know it.
Sean Palmer told him.
Yeah, Sean Palmer.
Sean Palmer.
Man, yeah, what a weird day here in Red Sox world, Red Sox nation.
And we're making it clear, Sammy, from your blown up tweet that you no longer love Cal Quantrill. You no longer want him as a trade asset.
Well, I it's kind of bittersweet because I feel vindicated in that he is a good pitcher, as we saw today, and he would, you know, from a on paper standpoint, fit the Red Sox needs. However, after today, I'm going to have to unfortunately jump off the Cal Quantrill to Boston boat as he tried to fight the backup catcher and our all-star.
Don't give him that credit. He didn't want to fight. He just wanted.
Actually, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Don't so that was that. Actually. Yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, the catcher coming and getting on Reese's shoulders, being like, "Hey, don't touch my pitcher."
And then Quantrill was the first one back in the dugout. He wanted no smoke. He just wanted to talk his shit and walk away.
And then we see the way Fleming described it. Yeah, Duran was coming at him. Yeah, like Fleming was saying Cora was coming to the dugout.
And then Duran took him.
He would have lost that fight, by the way. He would have lost that fight.
Oh, dude.
Are you kidding? If you looked at him, look at him and then look at Duran.
Reese is a pretty like thick dude, too. I think Reese probably would have whooped Cal Quantrill just looks kind of gangly. He doesn't look like he could fight. He throws very soft, too, so he probably doesn't hit very hard. I think I take Reese, and I think Jaron Duran would be minus 25,000 in a fight. Easy.
And you know what?
Remember when the Yankees fight with Joe Kelly in 2018 and the debate came like, how many Red Sox do you think would stand up to Aaron Judge and fight them and not many would think of it? I can think of a lot who could take on Cal Quantrill.
I mean,
like maybe half the roster.
Aaron Judge is like, when like with fights like that, sometimes guys are
fight either.
But sometimes guys are too big. Where it's kind of a disadvantage because their chin is so visible and they move slowly. So like I think like Duran has a good build for fighting because he's big but not like huge and long and like slow moving. Like I don't know how good Judge would be in a fight. Who's the guy? Oh, the Yankees prospect Spencer Jones, slightly smaller. He would be good in a fight, but Judge, I'm not sure. I think the Red Sox beat up the Yankees pretty easy. Too slow. Not athletic enough. Red Sox beat him in a fight. We should set this up.
Yeah, we should set it up. Also, screw the Rockies for pulling Cal Quantrill literally right before Reese's next step out against him. It was Reese was on deck. There was one out. Romy grounds into a double play, which it killed me because they probably wouldn't have pulled him and embarrassed him, made him walk off the mound before Reese came up. We would have gotten that at bat, but he still only had 83 pitches. So I figure, and like, they're up by a million runs. You might as well just let the guy go. Nope. They yank him right before Reese is at bat. I just bitch move.
So next year, Quantrill's under contract for 2025. Part of the reason I wanted the Red Sox to trade for him. So next year, when the Red Sox and Rockies play, if McGuire is still on the team, Nesson's got to do like their like the rivalry returns at Fenway Park. Reese McGuire, Cal Quantrill. Will sparks fly once again as these two powerhouses meet? Something like that, where they really hype up this fight between the backup catcher and a depth starting pitcher. That's entertainment, baby.
The villain, Cal Quantrill. Well, he's the villain. But shall we we're gonna preview. We got the Yankees coming to town
for a fight.
For a fight after an off day. So plenty of time. Pack the protein, get your rest, because you're going to have to take on Judge and not Stanton. But yeah, Yankees are still 60-43, 6-11 in July. They just started their game tonight, so we don't know what the second game of their Mets series outcome is. The matchups here, Sox got two lefties going up against them if they go as it's lined up. Actually, as I was doing this, none of the matchups had been announced. I'm going to double check that that's still the case. Oh, wait, no. They have now all been announced, and they're all exactly what I thought they were going to be. So they're all announced. First game, Brian Bello versus lefty Nestor Cortez. Second game, Cutter Crawford versus righty Marcus Stroman. Third game, Tanner Houck versus lefty Carlos Rodon. Nestor got blasted in his last start. Stroman was 5 1/3, 3 runs, 2 of which were earned. Carlos Rodon was struggling, but went 7 innings, 1 run, and 10 strikeouts against the Rays, so maybe back on track. As for the bats, you know how it is. It's just Judge and Soto. They have 60 homers, and then the rest of the players on the roster, like every other player combined, 60 homers. So Judge and Soto, 60. Rest of the players on the active roster, 60.
Gordo, they also have... I don't even want to say his name.
Yeah, Ben Rice has a 715 OPS. So like, all right, buddy. By the way, no one else besides Judge and Soto has an OPS over 715. So he actually is their...
Over 715? Holy crap. Wow, they really do have... They literally have two guys in their lineup. Why would you not just walk...
That's what the Mets
Judge
do.
And Soto. Yeah.
but one thing, Austin Wells, last 23 at-bats, 1144 OPS, and he actually has looked pretty good lately. He has picked it up. So
he's good, man. Yankees fans always talk... They always talk about Spencer Jones as like, this guy, you got to watch. I'm like, I think Wells is probably a better player.
Yeah. Well, Alex Verdugo, just a quick update there. Last 90 at-bats, he's got a 504 OPS. So
is that
Verdugo,
good, Gordo?
If you doubled it, it would be.
If you double his OPS, so all he's got to do is just do that, yeah. Verdugo, you idiot. Double your OPS.
All right, Joe, what do we got for a standings update on the series prediction? I already know that Sammy was the only one who got it right.
That is right. Sammy was the only one to correctly predict that they would lose 2 out of 3 in Colorado. Pat, Gordo, myself, all went with the winning 2 out of 3. So Sammy increases his lead. He's got 11, while the three of us are stuck on 6.
Yay. I'm so
Sammy,
excited.
I'm making you go first. You're going first.
Let's announce Pat's picks, because Pat has officially submitted his picks.
What does he want?
He says the Sox will win 2 out of 3.
Okay. Sammy?
Now Sammy can go.
Oh, I'm still celebrating my win. I'm so happy. Yay. Okay. I think the Red Sox. This is a tough one. I'm going to go with Pat. I'm going to say 2 out of 3. I think they win, loss, win. Yeah, a loss sandwich. They're going to sandwich the loss with 2 wins.
I'm going to go with the opposite of you, Sammy. I'm going to take 1 out of 3. I think it's going to be loss, win, loss. Just because I don't have any faith in them to hit a lefty. So.
That's why I picked.
Whatever you don't think
is going to happen has happened pretty much all year long. So I'm just going to keep going with the strategy because it's been working.
Are you guys forgetting that their middle win game was against a lefty? Tyler O'Neill with a couple of bombs off.
Yeah, but he sucks.
Dude, that guy was so bad. Oh my God, that dude was bad.
You guys are a bunch of haters. I'm going for a sweep. I think they
all right.
I'm going to say they sweep them. For some reason, I feel like Bayo's going to have a good outing against the Yankees. Plus, the whole team is juiced up because they're going home, and they know that they kind of have the Yankees' numbers. I like Cutter to bounce back, and then it's Sunday Sox. I'm calling for another Yankee sweep and for them to win this season series.
Sweep Joe, of the Yankees.
If you are right, There, in my opinion, if the Red Sox sweep the Yankees here, there's no world in which they miss the playoffs. So I hope you're right. If they sweep the Yankees, they're in. That's how it works.
There's like 55 games left after that.
In. If they sweep them, they're in.
Okay.
All right. With that, it's time for Crystal Bomb. Bomb it.
You had to do the entire intro without Pat. Are you all
bomb
right?
Bomb it.
That's a lot
of
work.
Joe, give me an update. I got a point here. I forgot someone else got a point.
And Sammy got a point. Gordo, you luckily got yours, Gordo.
Trash time.
From Jaron Duran in the third and final game.
And you know what? I only got it because Cal Quantrill told Reese to go jerk off in a parking lot. Jaron Duran's not going deep the next at bat if Cal Quantrill doesn't tell Reese to go jerk off in a parking lot.
Yeah, but Sammy also got a point. Tyler O'Neill. Whenever he wanted to hit a home run. So he got a point. I went with Raffy Devers and Pat went with David Hamilton. So the standings remain the same. Gordo in the lead with 15. Sammy in second with 13. You guys are running away with it. Pat in third with 7. And then me in the basement with 3. And Pat has submitted his pick and he's going with Jaron Duran.
Okay.
Pretty player.
Yeah, that's all right. Joe, I want to give you the next pick. You're down there with him. I want to give you the advantage here.
Oh, well, how nice of you. Let's see. So I can't do Devers and I can't do Duran. I feel like I want to say Tyler O'Neill, but I feel like, you know what? I'm going to go with Sedan. I feel like I'm waiting for a game for Sedan to break through and send one over the monster. So I'm going to go with him.
That was going to be my pick. Sammy, I'll let you go next.
I'm going to go Connor Wong riding the hot bat. He had a home run in the Rockies series. He almost had 2. Hit one deep, deep center field. I thought that the ball that didn't make it out in Colorado was hit a lot better than the ball that did make it out, which was interesting. That's baseball, Susan. So I'm going to go Connor Wong. 2 lefties. I like my chances.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was going to go sit on Rafaela because he's turning into a Yankee daddy. So I think that is a good pick by you, Joe. I guess I'm just going to have to use my Raffy pick. I mean, I wish they didn't have 2 lefties on the mound, but Raffy hits lefties too. So Raffy's going to get it
done.
Can I
ask you a question? Why would you not go O'Neill?
I can't. I used him 2 picks ago.
Oh, I was wondering. I'm like, oh,
okay. Also, how are we going to go into a Yankee series and not predict Devers to hit a bomb?
That's true. Someone's got to do it.
Cole's pitching as we speak. That's the problem.
Yeah, no Cole. And no heel. I don't know if that's... question for you guys. Would you rather face the lefties or Cole and Heel? I want to face Cole.
I would say Cole, maybe not Heel.
Probably the lefties just because they're beatable and Heel is nasty. And you don't want to, like, what if Garrett Cole is locked in that night? Like, he's not always bad against the Red Sox. So
it's interesting. Like, the Red Sox keep beating the Yankees, but, like, it's basically Cole and Heel are nasty or should be nasty. And then Nestor and Rodon are lefties. It's basically only Stroman is the one where you can go into a matchup and be like, yeah, we might be able to whoop this guy's ass. So it's interesting that the Sox keep winning.
Game two,
yeah.
Oh, I absolutely hate Marcus Stroman. That might be my least – him and Verdugo are probably my 2 least favorite players in Major League Baseball. So hope the Red
Stroman
Sox...
is mine. Stroman is my least favorite.
Stroman, yeah.
All right, Sammy, what do we got? What do we got? What do we got? Last segment.
Okay, no more Rockies series. It's time for winners. It's guys being dudes.
Yeah.
So this is a tough one because there's not a ton of guys who played for both the Red Sox and the Yankees. Plus, this is the third series they've played against the Yankees.
Second? Yeah, I can't remember if mine's a duplicate or not. So if it is, I apologize. I don't think it is, but it might be.
Okay, well... this segment, you got to name a player that played for both teams, the Red Sox and the Yankees. If you didn't know, those teams are actually rivals. So that's a little interesting tidbit for you if you weren't aware. Gordo, who is your player? I'll let you know if I think it's a repeat.
I'm going with David Wells, Boomer, who came to the Red Sox at the very tail end of his career. Like, this is a guy who did he throw multiple no-hitters with the Yankees? He threw at least 1 no-hitter.
I think he won with the Yankees.
This guy showed up to the Red Sox looking like an absolute balloon. But in the end, his first year was 05. He started 30 games with a 4.45 ERA. He pitched 184 innings. by that time standards, that kind of stunk. But I think if you asked me today if the Red Sox could have a guy with a 4.45 ERA start 30 games for them, I would take it. So I guess David Wells wasn't as shitty as we all thought, but yeah, definitely better for the Yankees than he was for the Sox.
Yeah, it was like a depth starter. I have a David Wells fun fact, and this is very much fits the stuff I'm into. David Wells, when he came to the number three, which is most number for a pitcher to wear, single digit pitcher number, absolutely not. But he switched very quickly to number 16 when the Red Sox got Edgar Renteria or something like that. So he wore two numbers in one season, which is very unusual. It's also unusual to see a how big was 6 foot three. Oh my God, this is such BS. What do you think his weight is listed as?
210. They list as 210 or something, 220.
187.
Oh my God.
This guy was.
That's what I weigh. I weigh 180.
Dude, this guy was like a 300 pounder. What are we talking about? I swear to God, I'm looking at it right now. David Wells, 6'3, 187. This guy, if you listing him at 300 would be more realistic. This ruined the end of my funny David Wells bit. Way to go, David Wells, fake weight 187.
Sammy, I want to, about the number switch. I remember why that happened. Because it wasn't.
Was it Renteria?
It was Renteria, but it wasn't because like they got Renteria and he wanted three. Renteria came in and he was 16, but he was playing so bad. He was number three with the Cardinals, and he was so bad that like David Wells is like, all right, like, or they agreed to switch the number to try to get him back on track.
Yeah, it didn't really work. Renteria was pretty blah in Boston. 89 OPS plus. So, all right, Joe, who you got?
I'm going with someone who played for the Sox and the Yankees at the tail end of their career. Not predominantly a Sox or a Yankee, but how about Marwin Gonzalez? Guy, utility guy, spent 21 with the Sox, part of that awesome run, but he did go back to the Astros for the first half. Last played in 2022 with the Yankees as a career. Spent 8 years in Houston, two in Minnesota. You do the math, that is a good for a 252 batting average, a 399 slug. Yeah, Marwin Gonzalez.
Do I have it right that he started the year in 21 with the Sox, got DFA'd, the Astros picked him up, and he won the World Series? I have that right?
That is.
That's like Jeff Teague did that shit with the
Sox. Well, not in 21. Well, oh, 21, wait. The Braves won in
21. Oh, okay, so he didn't win it the same year. Okay, so it's not quite like the Jeff Teague bullshit. Jeff,
no, I did the same thing. I for some reason, I was like, oh, yeah, he was on the 2018 team. It was 2021 team. Yeah, that's a good one. Marwin lost all his aura when he went to the Yankees. As many guys do, go to the Yankees. You're not allowed to express yourself. You have to shave your face and shave your hair. Very sad. All right. Two good ones. I'll finish it up. My selection is friend of the program and recent Red Sox player, Garrett Cooper, Koopaloop. Believe it or not, Koopaloop actually started his career with the Yankees and played really, really well. Only 13 games, 822 OPS. He kind of went off as a 26-year-old rookie, late bloomer. And they were like, nah, nah, we don't want you. Go to Miami. So he went to the Miami Marlins, where he made an all-star team in 2022.
Was he in the Stanton trade? Or no?
I don't know.
Here, you finish your thought. I'll figure it out.
All right. You check that out. He made an all-star team in 2022. Garrett Cooper, solid player, came to the Red Sox 2024. Didn't have the same success, had a 27 OPS plus, which, if you're not familiar, is really bad. He hit 171, also really bad, but it was really great to see him there. It was great to see him existing and present at the ballpark. And what more can you ask for?
All right, you ready for what the trade was before we wrap this up? It was not Stanton. He was traded to the Miami Marlins. It was Garrett Cooper and Caleb Smith for Michael King, a.k.a. the main piece of the Juan Soto trade. So there you have it.
Long live Koopaloop.
Long live Koopaloop. We appreciate you tuning in for episode 102 of Play Tessie. Hopefully this Sox-Yankees series gets going. You got a day off, but hopefully it gets going and the Sox take the series and get right back on track, and we will have more awesome deadline talk for you leading up to the deadline, including an episode dropping for you tomorrow. But before you do anything else you're doing with your day, hit the subscribe button, rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening, subscribe and rate. YouTube, we're on WEEI's page. We've got a playlist, Play Testy Playlist, and you can follow us on the socials at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Joe, it's Gordo here. Thank you for tuning in to Play Testy episode 102. Long live Alex Cora. Appreciate you tuning in. Peace.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.